Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present
Hello and welcome to GIST Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. GIST stands for Getting the Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on GIST, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to Creative Orange County, the radio show, where we interview Orange County, California's creative stars, artists, entrepreneurs, angel investors, CEOs, nonprofit leaders. My name is Susan, and I will be your host, and we have a bit of a cloudy morning here in Southern California. We're going to have some sunshine later. We had a great weekend, I think, in the area of the U.S. Open of Surfing. My husband and I actually were down on Laguna Beach at the beach. It cleared maybe about 1, but we still got a little bit sunburn. But we have a wonderful guest to interview today. His name is Lev Anderson, and let me tell you a little bit about him, give you some background. He was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and Lev has had a lifelong love for music, art, history, and politics. His first video experiences were when he was a child, and they were on the family's VHS camera, shooting fictional adventures, phone newscasts, and satires of MTV. He attended Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin, shout out to the Midwest, yay, where he majored in political science and created a minor in environmental ethics. Lev moved to the Bay Area in 2001, where he worked for 5 years as an urban planning consultant, working on several bicycle plans and other transportation planning projects. And after planning the cities of the future, Lev decided to bail out of the bureaucracy and landed a gig as an outreach coordinator for the PBS documentary, The Real Dirt on Farmer John. Welcome, Lev.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So this background, kind of urban planner to kind of maybe film guru and now documentarian director, tell us about that and where that came about, I guess, from your background.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I grew up in Portland, and, you know, my father was a social worker and my mother was a painter. And, you know, my father passed away when I was 12, but, you know, living with my mother, who's this painter, she didn't really have a job. She just kind of got by doing what she did and, you know, lovely artwork and everything, but it seemed like a really hard way to make a living. By the time I went to college, I was thinking, I'm not going to do anything in the arts. I want to do something practical. You know, I want to have a 9-to-5. I don't want to, you know, have to rely on my own creativity to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And so in college, I got really interested in, you know, environmental issues and politics. I was always kind of raised with politics anyway. Both my parents were pretty politically active. They met in Berkeley in the 60s.
Okay.
So that was always kind of a part of my life. And, you know, intellectually, I was drawn towards some environmental issues and then later on urban planning. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll be an urban planner. I'll, you know, help, you know, build sustainable cities, do things that you know, that we need to do in order, you know, for, you know, these cities to survive and thrive in a global climate change environment. But, of course, once I got into urban planning and a lot of the bureaucracy that goes into that, you know, while, you know, it seemed like a great fun job, you know, helping to plan bike paths and stuff, it just, I realized it really wasn't for me. And, you know, I wanted to get out from behind the desk and do something I was passionate about. And I had always, you know, played around with film as a kid, And I've done, you know, taken a lot of photography courses in high school and college. And so I had that background, and I thought, well, you know, I like to tell stories. And, you know, stories kind of embrace history and politics and art and music, and you can put that all into documentary filmmaking. So I just volunteered for this film project, The Realtor on Farmer John, and then they ended up hiring me full-time, you know, to do outreach and publicity stuff for them. And that was a really fun experience, and I got to get a real sense of what goes into making a film and also what goes into, you know, putting the film out there in the world. And so that was a really fun project. And then I, while I was working on that, I met Chris Metzler, who's my co-director, co-producer on the Fishbone documentary, Everyday Sunshine, The Story of Fishbone. And I told him my idea for the film, and, you know, he liked the idea. He didn't know a whole lot about the band, but, you know, I convinced him it would be a film to do, and he came on board, and that's how that project got underway.
So Lev alluded to Everyday Sunshine, The Story of Fishbone, and so that was in 2010. You completed his first feature, the award-winning documentary, again, Everyday Sunshine, The Story of Fishbone, which he co-directed and co-produced with Chris Metzler. And it's narrated by Lawrence Fishburne, and it premiered at the 2010 Los Angeles Film Festival, and it's going to be released theatrically in 2011. And I have to honestly say that I did not know of a Fishbone. Watching the documentary, it truly is a work of art. So tell me about that, about why the choice of a Fishbone, and just how that all came about, and about the production itself, because it's very interesting as to how documentaries put together. There's animation, there's live interviews, there's concert recordings. You really had truly had substantial access to these individuals. It's very, it's got a lot of heart. It's also heartbreaking, but actually joyful also.
Yeah, well, thanks. It was, yeah, it was quite the project. It took us a little over 4 years to complete. A lot of that was because Chris and I were both based in San Francisco at the time, and the band is based in Los Angeles, so we were traveling down. You know, we'd do one or two road trips a month and shoot as much stuff as we could. The film, the band Fishbone, they started, you know, they were these black kids growing up in South Central L.A., and then in the late 70s, they were bused out into the valley as part of the school district's desegregation efforts. And so once they got out there, they, you know, started listening to punk rock and Rush and Led Zeppelin, and then they kind of went on to create this music that really fused all these different styles together. So, you know, I felt I was a fan of the band. My father was into all kinds of crazy music, and he brought home Fishbone records and
Run-DMC
records, and yeah, so I got all my musical taste from my father, and he would take us to concerts. So I saw Fishbone when I was like 10 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, and for a 10-year-old, Fishbone is kind of the perfect music. You know, you can kind of very frenetic, and you can just jump around, and you know, there's slam dancing and everything else. And while I was pretty intimidated, I think, as a 10-year-old in a small club in Portland, you know, it was fun, and so I was always kind of a fan of the band. I lost track of them a little later on as the band kind of went through some of their lineup changes. So that's kind of where, you know, the initial idea came from, and I knew that they had this kind of background of, you know, with the busing, you know, because I'd read in interviews before, and I thought, if you're going to do a music documentary, there would be a great band to do, because you can, you know, talk to people like Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Gwen Stefani, but then you can also talk to Ice-T and George Clinton and Keith Morris from the Circle Jerks, you know, these other punk rockers, rappers, heavy metal people. You know, we've talked to one of the guys from Metallica, you know, and Branford Marsalis too. So I knew that you could, you know, their influence and their sort of camaraderie with these other musicians kind of span the whole spectrum of American music. And so I thought, well, if I'm only going to do one music documentary, this would be the one to do. So from there, you know, we convinced the band that we were the people to make the film,
And how long did that take? Did that take a while, or were they pretty receptive?
It took a couple months, and basically, you know, they didn't know who we were, even though I had, in fact, I had interviewed Angelo and Norwood for my college paper in the 90s.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, of course,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, I didn't remember that, but I think I still have that audio tape somewhere. It's a pretty fun interview. You know, it took a little while to kind of convince them that we were the ones to do it, but what really helped convince them was we showed them Chris's previous film, which is a great Southern California documentary called Plagues and Pleasures on the Salton Sea, which is about the Salton Sea and then all the kind of crazy characters that live around there, and it's narrated by John Waters, so it kind of adds this, you know, kind of voyeuristic freak show kind of thing, and they really liked that film, so that's kind of what got, you know, convinced them that we were the people to tell their story.
Okay.
And that's a great film, Plagues and Pleasures on the Salton Sea. It's a really fun documentary. So, you know, the other thing, too, is that there were a couple other people that were friends of the band that were thinking about doing a documentary, but nobody was really pulling the trigger and being aggressive about it. And once they saw that, you know, we were serious and that we could follow through on things, then that's what made it happen. And then when we started the film, you know, Angelo and Norwood, the singer and the bass player, were the only two original members left in the band. So the film kind of focuses on them, you know, as individuals. So it's kind of this personal portrait of those two guys, as well as this larger story of this, you know, kind of pioneering band coming out of L.A. at this certain time in history. So we kind of embed the whole story in the social context of what's going on, these larger cultural forces that kind of shape the band. But then it's also kind of this personal story of Norwood and Angelo and how they kind of get by and survive after all these years. So that's kind of why the film is kind of formatted the way it is. It kind of jumps back and forth in time, we didn't want to, you know, the band has never stopped playing. They've lost a few members along the way, but they've never broken up. You have so many bands out there that'll break up and then come back for, and, you know, try and do a reunion or something. But these guys have been, like, on the road for 30 years doing what
they
do. Which is pretty remarkable. There's not a whole lot of bands that can do that. And a lot of it is they have a small but a very hardcore fan base that kind of has carried them through, I think, these lean times. But we wanted to approach the story as not like this, like, you know, putting them in a museum or something, that this is like a living legacy. It's not just about the past and their glory days, but this is a working band that is still out there doing it. So that's another reason why we kind of, you know, edited the film the way we did.
And it was as I said, I knew nothing about Fishbone, and it was really terribly, terribly interesting. But I also loved this effect of, I mean, who thought of, you know, the animation, you know, interspersed with, you know, the live interviews, and then you had the concert recordings, and the animation was so very interesting. Are you an animator too?
No, it was my idea to bring in the animation because I had just. I thought that it could be used effectively if it was done right, and I had liked the way that in Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine, you know, there's this like little 2 or 3 minute section of like kind of like this history of America, and it's all done in this kind of South Park style animation, and I thought that was just like a really kind of effective, entertaining way to kind of, you know, go through a bunch of information. And we use our animation slightly differently. It's basically when the kids are in junior high school, when they all meet out in Woodland Hills in the suburbs. And they, you know, we figured, well, we don't have any old video footage from that. We don't want to just rely on photographs because that, you know, might not seem as fun as the stories that these guys are telling. So we decided to add this kind of Fat Albert style animation to go along with these little anecdotes that the guys have about meeting each other, and then that also kind of helped, you know, put it in this historical context too, because it kind of has this like late 70s, early 80s look to it, you know, and like, because I think that's kind of around the time that the Fat Albert cartoon was, you know, coming out, and and the guys talked about watching Fat Albert, and you know, them. This is them kind of putting together their own junkyard band, you know, because in Fat Albert, remember, they play in a band too. So we just thought it kind of worked on those different levels, and was a good way to introduce the audience to these different characters.
Oh, absolutely! It was really fascinating and quite fun. Now, it premiered last year at the Los Angeles Film Festival. So, what's happening with it? I know you've probably been out and about to other festivals with it, and it's going to be released this coming fall. Here, is there a date yet?
Yeah. So, we've been doing the film festival circuit for the last year. I'll be, you know, traveling out to Salt Lake City for the festival there in a couple weeks. So, it's still going strong. We will be releasing theatrically October 7th in New York City, and then October 21st we open up for a theatrical run at the Lemley Sunset in Los Angeles on October 21st. And we'll be doing, little runs in individual cities here and there. We're hoping to do something in Irvine. I know that we will be doing a midnight screening on October 22nd at the Art Theater in Long Beach, and I'll be there, and I think Angela will also be there for a Q&A after the screening. So we're kind of going to be taking it around the country, and we're trying to sync it up with Fishbone, because they're putting out a new album around the same time that the film is coming out, so we're going to try and have the film play in the cities that they're playing in so that they can come in and do Q&As and everything. So
did the documentary, were they planning to do a new album, or did that kind of spark them to consider that they would like to do a new album? Did one have anything to do with the other?
Well, I think they were, probably, market savvy enough to realize that, it would help maybe to have a new album out, but I think they were going to be working on a new album anyways. Their last album, I think, came out in 2008, so I think they had some new material they wanted to put out and figured, if it comes out around the same time as the film, that would be the best time for them to release a record. But they would have done one anyways, I'm sure.
Okay.
But, yeah, having the film out there helps.
And the audience, the reviews and such for the documentary, great reviews, I would assume.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of great reviews, and the film is really, it appeals to people that have never heard of the band, might not even like the music, but, kind of get hooked into the story of these guys.
Oh, absolutely.
They're really strong personalities, really unique individuals, and it's just kind of a fun film, even if you have no idea who they are or if you even care about the music. I mean, it's funny. When we were we screened once in St. George, Utah, and we screened at this festival, and then the band came out and played right after. Like, the film screened in this club, and then they raised the curtain, and the band was there. And, a couple of 70-year-old women dancing, at this, totally sober. St. George, Utah, no alcohol being served kind of thing, but people really loved it. So we get teenagers that love it that never heard of Fishbone, and then you get these older people, too, that just kind of get hooked into the story, and we've gotten great reviews, and I'm very excited that we've had this kind of success with my first feature film.
Oh, that's terrific, love. And if our listeners would like more information, is there a website for the film?
You can go to www.fishbonedocumentary.com, and we also have a Twitter page, which is @fishbonefilm. And we're also on Facebook, too. So if you sign up on Facebook, that's kind of the best way to kind of keep track of when the film might be screening in your area.
Terrific. Now, you've got some other projects coming up that I know I'd like to talk about. We have maybe about 10 minutes left. So you're working on two new documentary projects, one called Model City and the other Binary Demise. So tell us about those two.
Well, Binary Demise is just a short film that I'm doing that I'm hoping to use more animation for. So that's kind of a creative thing that I'm hoping to, develop even more. But that'll be like a 5 or 10 minute film. I've already shot it all. I'm just kind of editing and figuring out the storyboarding for the animation. But that is basically just this interview I did with this gentleman that runs a record store called The Record Collector on Melrose. And he's just kind of one of these vinyl...
Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Yeah,
it's right by the Fairfax High School there. It's like off of Melrose and Fairfax, a couple blocks.
Okay.
And all he sells is vinyl. He's been in business for years, and that's all he sells. And I went in their store once, and, you know, I was just kind of looking around, and he just kind of pounced on me and launched into this tirade about this, like, divide of American culture over the last 50 years as told through the history of vinyl records. So... you know, how even just listening to digital music makes you less intelligent, and all this, you know, kind of wacky theories about things. And I was thought, well, can I bring my camera in here and talk about this? And, you know, so that I want to get, you know, like one of his ideas is that, you know, just as digital, you know, digital sound files like your MP3, they're compressing the analog signal. They're compressing the, you know, the natural, you know, sound of music or whatever. And when you compress it, you lose information. And so he says that, you know, just listening to it compresses your brain waves, and you lose information. And so, you know, I want to have animation of brain waves being compressed and different things. So that's just a fun little side project that, you know, I'll, you know, maybe submit to a few festivals and then put up on YouTube or something. But then the Model City is kind of going to my urban planning background. I got the rock and roll out of my system with the Fishbone film, and now I get to get the urban planning out of my system. And it's a documentary about Irvine, California, here in Orange County. So I live in Irvine now. I live in Irvine Company Apartments. my wife took a job down here 2 years ago, and, you know, we were in San Francisco, but I've been living here for almost 3 years now, I guess. Wow.
Okay.
But, you know, I was always struck by, you know, Irvine is the largest master planning community in the United States, and probably the most successful, I would say, in terms of... you know, what the city's turned into. You know, you've got, it's been the safest city in America 5 years in a row, according to the FBI. You know, I heard the statistic that 90% of the high school students go to college. You know, so they've done all these things here that are, you know, really successful in terms of families wanting to locate here and raise their kids here, you know. And, you know, but at the same time, I feel like, there's something really missing in kind of the civic culture of Irvine, you know, and sometimes it feels like you live in a model, you know, so it's kind of this play off of this idea that you've got, you know, these different ideas of what a model city is, you know, like I feel like sometimes I live in this architectural model that doesn't really have any real vibrant culture going on because everything looks the same and there's no center of town, you know, but at the same time, they you know, It's obviously very successful in attracting people because you know, it hasn't been hurt by the housing crisis, and they do some good things well. But so this is a film that I've started doing some interviews with, and you know, I'm not really sure which direction it's going to head in. You know, that's kind of the fun thing with documentaries is it's not all scripted like a Hollywood film. You know, you kind of find, you know, follow the story where it leads you. And I think there's a lot of interesting stories. I've met a lot of interesting people already. We'll see where it goes. I mean, my hope is that it's kind of a reflection on, you know, how we like to live in cities, you know, what do we find desirable about cities, but then also, you know, how are we going to live in the future? Because I'm somebody that believes global warming is a real thing, and I think it's going to, you know, could radically affect the way we live. And how does a city like Irvine kind of adapt to that or become a model for other cities and how to adapt to that because it's got some unique advantages, you know, that might allow it to kind of shift towards sustainable living more easily than other places. So it's kind of a mouthful. It's kind of a big, messy project, but I think it'll be fun.
It sounds like it. And so the individuals that you've interviewed, do they say, oh, you've got to talk to this person now, probably? You know, and you go off to talk to that person and kind of go on that tangent?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it works. I mean, even with the Fishbone film. So it's like, you know, with the Fishbone film, you know, we knew, you know, you could kind of guess who what some of their friends were, but, you know, there was always these different surprises of, you know, like, for example, in the Fishbone film, Ice-T, you know, who's this kind of gangster rapper turned Hollywood actor, and he, I had no idea, but he used to know the guys in the neighborhoods back, way back in the day before any of them were involved in the music business. And there were really funny stories about, you know, how he was the first brother in the hood with a Porsche. And, like, he was, like, selling Fila tennis shoes out the trunk of his car, you know. So he was, like, really a hustler, you know. And and he knew the guys back then because he started to host parties at clubs in L.A. And he was like an MC, you know. And anyways, those are just kind of these fun stories that you kind of uncover. And I really hope with the Irvine Project, and if there's people out there listening that live in Irvine, if they're longtime residents or have some, you know, perspective and want to get in front of a camera to talk, I'm more than welcome to talk to folks. And also, especially if people have any old video footage or photos of Irvine throughout the years, that I could possibly include in the film, that always helps too. You know, I'm looking at all the normal places, the libraries, the university, for, you know, a lot of that stuff. But, you know, you never really know what's out there. You don't know what stories are out there or you know, cool old Super 8 family films or something that might show Irvine at a particular time, you know, that might be, you know, fun to include in the film. So.
Oh, absolutely. You know, people, so how can they, anyone get a hold of you then if they have some of that material for you or just want to chat about Irvine?
Yeah. Well, I've got, maybe the best way is just to email me. And my email is my name, levanderson@gmail.com. It's L-E-Z as in victory, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N@gmail. I also have a website mainly for my photography work. It's labapictures.com, so that's L-A-B-A, pictures, P-I-C-T-U-R-E-S, .com. And there's contact information there and stuff, and you can look at photographs I've taken over the last couple of years.
So we've got a few minutes left, so maybe speak to your photographic pursuits. And also, you moved from kind of San Francisco to Irvine, and so that's probably been a bit of a transition. And kind of, what have you discovered, and what do you like to do here? That may be different than San Francisco. I don't know. Is that too much for 2 minutes?
I'm trying to speak in. I've been talking a lot pretty quickly, I think. Well, on a creative side, like just with my photography, I love taking photos of different things, but I think mainly I take a lot of photos of landscapes with, and they kind of are missing people, you know, like they're like urban landscapes, they're kind of empty, but it's kind of a reflection of, like, again, kind of this idea of how do we live and how does our architecture and landscape maybe influence us in ways that we don't normally think about, you know, kind of like on the subconscious level, you know, like so that's what I try to do with my photography, and it's interesting coming from San Francisco to Irvine. It's very different architecturally. It's a very different kind of living environment. And you know, there's times when I want, and I like taking photographs at night too, so there's times I'll go out and take photos at night in Irvine, and I feel like I'm going to get arrested, you know, because there's nobody on the street, and let alone anybody out there taking photographs, and I probably freak people out, you know. So that's the one challenge. Whereas in San Francisco, you can walk around, take photos wherever you want, you know, and not really feel conscious.
Right, at 2 a.m, and, you know, people are still out and about.
Right. And then another thing, too, is that kind of ties in with my, you know, my photography and my Irvine film project is, like, how do you – I think Irvine is very visually striking in its sameness and its kind of uniform look, you know, which is, you know, intentional, and I can – understand it in terms of a branding and marketing real estate way. You know, I can't criticize it, like, on that level. But it's really kind of a challenge to take photos or shoot video of this landscape without it looking really kind of boring or indistinguishable. And so I think that's like a my biggest creative challenge with this film is how do you really portray this kind of beautiful faux Mediterranean landscape in a way that's kind of engaging and informative without it seeming too bland or making it seem too much like your typical suburbia, when I think Irvine is actually, you know, it's not quite like the suburbia that most people are used to. So,
well, this has been terrific, Lev, and it's been a pleasure to have you and join me today. And I know that he will keep me up and send information about what's happening with Fishbone and also his other documentaries and his photography to Creative Orange County at hotmail.com. Keep me kind of up to breath, up to date, so I can post it on the website and let everyone know. But this has been really terrific. So I thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Susan. And I guess if people do want to reach me for Irvine, they can reach out to you, too, if they didn't get my email address and all that. So,
But it's loveanderson@gmail.com, and then you've got www.fishbonedocumentary.com, and then you have labpictures.com. Is that right?
Lab A.
Lab A Pictures.
Yeah. Yep.
.com. Terrific.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. Well, Creative Orange County is a think tank at the intersection of culture, commerce, and community in Orange County, California. And if for more information, you can visit www.creativeorangecounty.com. But I did want to make an announcement coming up on Saturday, October 1st. Will be TEDx SA Artist Village. It's going to be at the Yost Theater in Santa Ana. So look for more information on creativeorangecounty.com about that event. If you're familiar with TED and TEDx, it will be a terrific, inspiring event where you hear different individuals giving a TED Talk, which is 18 minutes. And you can also email me at creativeorangecounty@hotmail.com if you'd like to recommend an Orange County creative star, someone for me to interview, or if you have project ideas for partnerships and collaborations which will inspire and engage Orange County's creative community. Until next week, thank you again, Lev, and we will be talking to you soon. Thank you. Bye.